I no longer hold this office. I will be right there with you as a citizen, inspired by those voices of fairness and vision, of grit and good humor and kindness that have helped America travel so far.
The National Guard will help distribute bottled water, filters, and lead testing kits to the residents of Flint. Governor Rick Snyder's order comes 3 months after testing found increased lead levels in residential water supply.
It always was about Los Angeles and what Los Angeles and those great fans that we have out there mean to the NFL.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:09 on this Wednesday. It is January 13, 2016. Welcome to it. If you're just getting up, make sure you have a little extra time planned in your schedule this morning. It is another chilly, cold, frigid morning. Lots of frozen windows and cars. Your nostrils will even be frozen as soon as you step outside today. It is a cold one, and please drive safely. Watch for that snow that Vic and Tim were talking about that's going to affect us for a little bit today. The markets overseas actually stabilized for a bit yesterday. That's a nice change to see after several days of volatility and up and down and jittery nerves. Asian shares rose on the Shanghai market. The Chinese export figures improved as well. Investors also were cheered by gains on Wall Street that snapped a losing streak, including an eight-day slump for the NASDAQ composite. After a tumultuous start for the Chinese stocks, both of the markets there showed tentative stability, likely at least partly due, according to some analysts, to government efforts to control fluctuations in currency there and in the market. Global markets were rattled by steep falls in Chinese stocks and bigger than usual drops in the tightly controlled yuan. On Wall Street yesterday, shares lower for most of the day, but they regained lost ground right before the end of in the last hour of trading. The Dow Jones Industrials gained about 117 points yesterday to close at 16,516. The Standard & Poor's 500 index added about 15 points or about to close at 1938.68. The NASDAQ climbed 47 points, almost 48 points, to 46.85. The benchmark U.S. crude oil rose about 30.50 a barrel. The dollar gained against the euro and the yen. The Federal Reserve releases its beige book this afternoon. The report tracks business conditions in the central bank's 12 regions. MetLife says it plans to carve out carve off its U.S. life insurance business via a sale, spinoff, or initial public offering as the parent company challenges harsher regulatory oversight. The New York company says the potential standalone business would have about $240 in total business assets. And Westmoreland County, a Georgia County farmer, has been elected president of the American Farm Bureau. The convention wrapping up in Orlando yesterday, where delegates there elected his name is Zippy, as a matter of fact. That's his nickname that he goes by, but they have a new leader, and he was elected at the American Farm Bureau. We'll have that full story for you throughout the day, and hopefully we'll be able to hear from Orion Samuelson, who was there at the National Farm Bureau meeting in Orlando. Also, we are hearing today U.S. airlines have raised fares on domestic flights. It started last weekend, and so far it seems to be holding. These are pretty steep hikes when you look at it from a percentage standpoint. But there are a few deals to be found, especially if you're planning a spring break trip or a early spring, late winter trip. Let's bring in Rick Cini to our conversation this morning about the business of flying. Rick is founder and CEO of FareCompare.com. And joins us from Dallas. Rick, good morning. This is a happy new year for the airlines.
Well, for airlines it may be, but certainly not for consumers. Last week, airlines raised prices by $6 round trip. That's the equivalent of a grocery store raising all their prices by just under 1%, not just certain products. On any given route out of Chicago, for example, prices may be wildly different, but this is across the board raise. Last year, they tried this almost a dozen and a half times with only about two or three successes. So they I don't do this very often, but that just tells you the economy is just good enough for airlines to raise prices.
Well, and usually they give some sort of excuse, like gas prices, or, you know, fuel. What, did they give an excuse this time or not? Or did they just raise
not
prices?
Much of an excuse there, other than their investors would like to make more money. So I think, again, last quarter airlines made $9 billion. They're getting a huge windfall from the drop in oil prices. They were barely scratching by at $90 or $95 a barrel oil. Now oil at $35 a barrel, they're making some serious windfall profits.
And so for you and me, when we go to the airport, we buy our ticket, we're sitting there and we're just like, you know what, this is just, they made so much money last year. What, you know, are they ever going to give us a break?
Well, you know, it's about when you fly, really, to give a break. So they're not necessarily, you know, targeting specific consumers. They're just saying, hey, these, our competition is worse or better in certain routes. I'm going to be cheaper on certain days. You know, the cheapest days to fly are Tuesday, Wednesday, and Saturday. We actually did a study in the first half of the year for the best and worst days to fly. And the worst days sort of stack up as March 17th. That's when prices go up 5 or 10% for departures. Then you have May 17th. They go up another 5 or 10%, and then June 10th, they go up another 5 or 10% right as kids go out of school, as we had the busy summer season. So you want to shop early, no later than about a month before departure, preferably about 3 months out, and you want to pick the cheapest days to fly. And, you know, I'll give you an example. For spring break, my family, we saved about $400 by going Tuesday to Saturday instead of Sunday to Saturday, for example.
After 9/11, I think we were all very sympathetic for the airlines, and all of us cared very deeply for the losses of the airlines involved with that. But now that that has a decade passed, I think, are they being greedy? And do you foresee some regulations stepping in to stop these fare hikes from continuing?
Yeah, you know, on the particular, you know, issue of greed, it's like the kids in my neighborhood in the summertime, and I live in the Dallas area. They charge twice for lemonade what they charge in the wintertime. So I don't call them greedy necessarily. But yeah, sure, they're going to try to make as much money as they can. You know, and the other part of the question was, what was the other part of the question?
Do you think there's going to that the government might step in at some point?
Well, absolutely, they already are. The Department Justice has an ongoing investigation for collusion in what they call capacity control, which is the airlines controlling the number of seats that they fly. If you looked up at the air today and looked back at 2007, before we had the oil crisis in 2008 and the recession in 2009, you'd have 12% more seats in the air, more flights in the air. There's 12% less. And airlines aren't adding back those seats, even though they're making these big windfalls. So there's an investigation right now. We're in the presidential cycle. We've seen every time a senator gets charged a bag fee, there's a new legislation to remove bag fees or tax them. So certainly they've got policymakers and taxation for higher taxes for the September 11th fee, for example. So there's plenty of stuff going on at the policy side of things that airlines have to worry about.
You know, and it would be one thing if we paid these fares and the experience of flying was a pleasant one. But it's not. I mean, there's delays, there's still continuing delays. Once you get on the plane, you're crowded and cramped. Then you have to pay for everything on the plane. And that's you're seeing even more of that, aren't you, paying for stuff?
No, absolutely. This is the airline fee generation. You're talking about, you know, almost $6 billion in just the bag fee and change fee alone last year, going to be even higher. So that's probably last year that was almost the total sum of airlines' profits. Now with the oil prices, they're going to even have bigger profits. But in general, if you looked at a plane, airlines' profit is about one or two seats on every plane, not counting all these additional things that they're charging for, including bag fees and food and cutting in line and getting an aisle and a window seat, which is all adding tons of revenue onto their bottom line.
We're going to be talking on the opening bell to one of the travel bloggers about something that I ran across during the holidays. It was something called last class seating.
Sure.
You're familiar with that, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So it's basically the new section of a plane that sort of mimics the Spirit, Allegiant, Frontier model, which is the ultra low cost, where you're back in the back, there's no knee room, it's only a few aisles back there. But this is a reflection of basically the way planes have changed, and the reflection of the overall world economy and the U.S. economy as well, which is they're sort of getting rid of first class and then breaking up coach into the haves and the have-nots, the one with legroom and the ability to maneuver their tray tables up at the front and last class at the back.
Well, we have projections today of oil dropping even further. One analyst said we might see $16 a barrel by next year. If we still have these high airfares by next year, if oil does drop that far, that'll be too much, right?
I think that's probably going to break the line where policymakers say, hey, this is crazy, especially on international airfare where they still have fuel surcharges over $400 round trip on average to Europe and into Asia. So that's where it's going to be. You're going to see it first. We actually haven't had fuel surcharges on domestic airfare since November of 2008.
All right, Rick Saney, thanks for being with us this morning from Dallas from faircompare.com. You can follow Rick on Twitter at Rick Saney, S-E-A-N-E-Y. You can find him, though, at faircompare.com. He runs the blog there, and there's some more tips on how to find some decent airline fares. It's 5:18 on the opening bell, and Mary Vandeville is here with traffic.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Efforts by the Chinese government to control fluctuations in its currency seemed to pay dividends yesterday. After a tumultuous start to the year, Asian shares rose today as Shanghai's market stabilized for a second day. Chinese export figures improved. On Wall Street, shares were lower for most of Tuesday, but then regained lost ground in the final hour of trading. The Dow Jones Industrial Average gained 117. The S&P added 15. The NASDAQ composite snapped an 8-day losing streak, picking up 48 points on the day. Competition in the teenage fashion industry is claiming winners and losers. Aeropostale says it plans to cut expenses by $40 million a year and let 100 employees go. Fast fashion outfits like H&M and Forever 21 have become more popular with teens than stores like Aeropostale. Consumers around the world are turning to smartphones and tablets, and sales of personal computers are way down. The one exception, Apple, which has managed to ship 6% more Macs in 2015 than the year before. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
It's 5:22 on the opening bell, and our daily conversation about the business of life and the life of business continues. It's a startup new year, innovative new year for many folks. Let's bring into our conversation Scott Catoon, who's one of our business experts here at WGN. And Scott, good morning. How are you?
Good, Steve. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. You know, we had you on last week as one of our first guests, and we feel like we just want to have you back regularly now because you were so good. We had such a good response to folks because this innovation and startup thing is really hot right now in Chicago. And you follow these companies very closely. You know, you sort of have your finger on the pulse of things going on. And we've been hearing a lot of good things about a startup called Raise. Tell us what that's about.
Yeah, so actually I had the CEO and founder, George Boussis, on my show, I want to say September. Raise has just been on fire lately. They're basically an e-commerce platform, marketplace for people to put up any of their gift cards, whether they like them or they don't like them or they want to sell them. And it's just been on fire. I mean, when I talked to him, when I talked to George, they had just finished an $80 million raise, essentially. And these are from A-list investors, Jeremy Levine, guys out of New York, Bessemer Venture Partners, who's a guy who backed LinkedIn. So, I mean, these are some big time investors who are paying attention to this. And what the gift card marketplace looks like is it's about $125 billion annual marketplace. So to give you kind of a perspective on how much money that is. And the market for online cards is increasing about 20% year over year. Mm-hmm. So it's a huge deal. And for Chicago, it's an even bigger deal because we had Groupon, which was the first unicorn and the fastest unicorn ever. So it seems like if you're, you know, Chicago doesn't have a lot of unicorns. And for those who don't know what that is, that's a company valued at $1 billion or more. We don't have a lot of those startup companies, but when we do, they are the fastest to get to the $1 billion valuation of any place in the country. We have three of them that have been the three fastest, yeah. Starting with Groupon. Avant just hit the fastest pace. I think it took them like a year and a half to get to a year and three quarters to get to $1 billion valuation. And Raise is on its way to beat that record.
So, and the idea is that, you know, if you get a gift card, somebody gives you a gift card for, you know, and you don't want to use it, or you don't shop at that particular place. Tell us how the idea concept works.
Yeah, so basically, you know, a couple of years ago they passed a law that got rid of the gift card rule that it expired after 5 years. Now, if you have a gift card, you offer a gift card as a company, it has to, you have to back it forever, essentially. And on the back of gift cards, you notice there's a SKU. And so when you go onto this platform, you can type in the SKU number, and so you don't have to send the card, and it doesn't matter physically where the card exists. And you can essentially put up, let's say I went to, I got a gift card at Walmart, or I made a return at Nordstrom's, and I got $14. It's an odd number. It's not something I can just gonna turn around and give to somebody. And maybe I don't shop, you know, at Nordstrom's. So I can actually just go on Raise.com, type the SKU card in, and post my $14 gift card and maybe charge $10 for it. And somebody else on the other end of this platform can say, hey, you know what, I'm a shopper at Nordstrom's, and I could use that $14, and I'll pay $10, $12 for it. And so it's a real bidded marketplace.
Yeah, you were comparing it to Groupon, and you know, reading the press about Raise, you know, one of the venture capitalists that's sort of backing this gave it even a bigger plug than that, referring to it as the StubHub for gift cards. I mean, that's a pretty good compliment, isn't it?
Oh, it's a fantastic compliment. I'm sure that George, I doubt he's up right now, although maybe he is. He's a pretty hard worker. I'm sure he loved that. And, you know, there's some people who actually turned down the investment, and they're, you know, I think they're going to be sorry for having done that.
We want to continue our conversation with you in our next segment, but I'd like you to think about, when we come back, we'll talk about the challenges that Raise might be having, and I know there maybe be some, you know, some space issues, and they're having those growing pains, the good growing pains, because they're growing in a good way. But we'll do that after we do news and check the weather and traffic and all that good stuff. But the other thing is, too, this cloud tax that Chicago has put in place is really also causing some jittery nerves. So I'd like to maybe continue our conversation on that front and see how both of those things are impacting Raise. We're talking about Raise, which is, as Scott said, the sort of the Groupon, the new Groupon of Chicago, here on our daily conversation about business. It's 5:28, and we're going to take a break. We'll be back with news. This is The Opening Bell on WGN.
It's not too much of a stretch to say that some of the only people in America who are going to work the same job in the same place with a health and retirement package for 30 years are sitting in this chamber.
There's so many problems in so many places. The next president's really going to have his hands full.
As the Rams return here to L.A., where they played until 1994, St. Louis is left without a team. Missouri's governor calls the NFL's decision disappointing.
Governor Rick Snyder's order comes 3 months after testing found increased lead levels in residential water supply.
We're working hard to recover from this.
5:37, The Opening Bell. Those are some of the big stories that are happening around the world this morning that we'll be covering for you on WGN throughout the morning on the Steve Cochran Show and at WGN 720 News. The State of the Union last night. There's some developing news today, too. Iran has released those Navy sailors. Right now we're talking, having a conversation about the business of innovation, and Scott Catoon, one of the innovators over at 1871 in Chicago, one of the incubators for startups. We've been talking about Raise, which is a company that takes your gift cards, and I still don't know how they do this. I mean, in my head, I'm still trying to figure it out, Scott, but they take your gift card and turn it into money and make a profit on it. One of the venture capitalists calls it the StubHub for gift cards. It's sort of like Groupon, as you said, but, you know, they've been growing by leaps and bounds, and you're talking about the influx of capital that they've been getting. Give us a sense of that, those growing pains, even though they're good growing pains, and the challenges this company faces.
Well, I mean, the reality is they, I can't remember the exact number. I think there was approximately 80 or so people that they had working from when I talked to George on my show. They then bumped that to about 100. Now they're closer to like 300 employees. And so they have this really cool space, and they've expanded basically every 6 months. They've had to expand out of it. So they're looking at maybe needing to get another space. Which, you know, I guess the downside of that, other than just a real estate play, is that they've got to keep up with demand, and I should say demand has to keep up with them. I mean, they had 5.2 million hits on their website in November, according to ComScore, and the kind of volume that brings in for them, it has to maintain that way. The interest in selling and buying gift cards has to stay that high. Otherwise, you know, it's hard to stay a billion-dollar company, put it that way.
Yeah, when we had you on last week, we had a discussion, a conversation about the, you know, the business climate. And one of the items that's in the news this week is this cloud tax here in Chicago that's affecting folks. I know it doesn't necessarily affect startups unless they're beyond a certain amount of age, but this tax, which initially was, I think, 9%, and they negotiated it down to 5.25% on cloud services, really sent kind of some jitters through the startup community, didn't it? And how is that impacting the climate here?
Yeah, I mean, it did. I mean, my favorite part was the Department of Finance said the ruling targeted electronically delivered amusements. So you can use your imagination and figure out what that exactly means. What it means to people like Netflix and Spotify, that's an actual threat. I mean, those are universally consumed online digital platforms that, you know, generally only were running into rights issues, right? The licensing issues of their content. To then have a local tax added to that, you know, it's hard. Anyone, you know, obviously people are cutting cords, and that, you know, that's great for companies like Netflix, Hulu, and others. But it also makes it more difficult for us to acquire, us as startups and technology-based companies, to acquire a consumer base, because one of the biggest perks to going digital is it's less expensive. So if every single one of these local areas adds their own tax to it, then, you know, what happens if they had a federal tax? It cuts into the margin, it cuts into the reason that you're going to go digital, and that's the threat. And I don't know that it necessarily how it would impact a person like George at Raise, although the second part of that ruling is non-possessory computer leases. So that's a database, LexisNexis, using Amazon Web, things like that.
Right.
And I don't know how it works against the marketplace, though.
Well, and I guess, you know, my pointing on this was it sort of sends like a shot across the bow of what might happen to startups if they come to Chicago. It sends does it send the wrong message, do you think, even though it may not affect George and Ray's and some of the other startups? It sends a wrong message, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, well, clearly, you know, from a PR standpoint, the startups, that's not ideal, right? I mean, anything that gets in the way of a fast-growing, sort of need-to-be-fast-growing ecosystem like a startup company would need, that's not ideal. But at the same time, you know, the fact that they've negotiated down to 5% makes it a little bit more palatable. And then the other reality is we live in a state that has some budget issues. And there are other states, we're not the only one. And there's other taxes that California, for example, has to pay, and the people in Silicon Valley have to deal with this. There's inflation. There's all kinds of stuff that goes on state to state basis. So there's positives and there's negatives. This happens to be one that I think, to us, is a negative. To the state, it's a positive. They're trying to take advantage of a fast growing community.
Scott Catoon, who is one of the innovators at 1871, and also the host of Tomorrow's Business Today on WGN Plus. You can follow him at The Medillion and at TBT on WGN. Scott, it's good to talk with you as always, and we can't wait to have you on again.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, Steve.
All right, thank you. Yeah, this is the opening bell on WGN. The Dow futures markets are higher this morning. In early trading, the Dow futures up 81 points. The NASDAQ futures, or the S&P futures, rather, are up 10 points. Asian markets overseas, believe it or not, most of them were in pretty good positive territory, except the Shanghai, which fell 73. The Nikkei up 497. The Hang Seng up 223. Again, Dow futures higher by about 81 points, indicating a higher open on Wall Street later this morning. It's 5:43 on the opening bell. And coming up in our next segment, we're going to be having a conversation about retail, the business of retail. Macy's, as you remember, around the holidays, didn't have such a good season. Gap also reporting it did not have a happy holidays as well. We'll talk to an expert in this area as the conversation about the business of retail continues, coming up here on WGN.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:46 in Chicago this morning. A cold morning as you get going. Temperatures are still hovering around zero on the markets. The Dow futures up 82. Asia actually had a better night last night. The Nikkei up 497. All of the other indices generally higher except the Shanghai. Our conversation now switches to the business of retail, and we had a report last week about Macy's shedding jobs, and they didn't have a happy holiday. The holiday season was not good either for the Gap, and we're going to bring in CNBC reporter Christina Gustafson, who is one of the experts at CNBC on all of this and has been doing a lot of reporting about it. Good morning, Christina from New York. How are you?
Hey, Steve. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for being with us on the opening bell. We know you had to get up pretty early to do this, and we love that. But you're the expert on this, and boy, it wasn't a happy holiday for a lot of retailers, was it?
Yeah, no, that's definitely the case. Macy's, as you mentioned, was particularly under pressure. Gap continued. You know, they've been struggling for a couple of months now, but the big thing there was that Old Navy, which has kind of been their growth engine for the past couple of quarters, it also slowed for the second straight month. So a little concerning out of there. But at the same time, you know, we are also seeing some good news. Retailers like Lululemon are doing pretty well. Their turnaround is trending pretty well. So a little bit of a mixed bag.
Is it is the retail model, like the brick and mortar retail model, dying? We, you know, have seen through most of our lives, we've gone to the mall and there's an anchor store and you see all the other stores around it. Is that going away?
You know, it's not necessarily going away, but it's definitely changing a lot. And in the past, you know, when companies were going out there and developing real retail properties, they were kind of doing this cookie-cutter approach, right? Just kind of plopping a mall in any market. But what they're realizing now is that different markets are more conducive to different types of properties. So we got some news from Taubman yesterday that they're actually going to be transitioning. They were planning to build an enclosed mall in Miami, but they took a look at the market and realized, hey, you know what? It might be better suited to do something where it's more of an outdoor, pedestrian-friendly type of property. So it's just kind of changing, if that makes sense.
It does, and I have to wonder how much, like, Amazon is having an impact on this because, you know, around the holidays, I saw more Amazon trucks in my neighborhood, I think, than UPS trucks making deliveries. Even on Sunday mornings. I mean, it really is getting to the point where you can order something from Amazon and have it there that day, perhaps even in a couple of hours. How big of an impact is that having on retail?
Yeah, it's obviously having a huge impact. I think one of the ways that it's having the biggest impact is just in terms of customer expectations. The fact that you just mentioned, you know, all these trucks are delivering, it seems like they're delivering nonstop, sometimes within an hour. So that's kind of making consumers feel like, okay, you know what, if I order this from Nordstrom.com, if I don't receive it in the next day, you know, maybe I want to shop elsewhere. But I think the companies that are going to do the best against the Amazons of the world are the companies that offer a differentiated product, you know, something that you can't go to Amazon.com and get, whether it's a unique piece of apparel or something along those lines.
Yeah, and the reason I bring up the Amazon thing is because before the holidays, you know, they announced I was coming here to WGN, and I thought, well, I'm going to go out and buy a new wardrobe and have some nice, you know, better clothes to wear and do some holiday shopping. And the men's stores that I went to actually had no inventory whatsoever. That may have been partly because of the holidays, but when I asked the salesperson, who was very unhelpful about it, they just said that, you know, they're not carrying inventory. Go online and buy it. And I'm like, well, why did I waste my time coming in here? And if I have that attitude, I mean, if I'm getting that attitude and that perception, I may never go back to one of these stores again. Is that a danger?
Yeah, that's definitely a risk. Yeah, sorry, that's definitely a risk. And I think, you know, things are getting so much more complicated for these bricks and mortar guys. You know, as you mentioned, they might have the product in stock online, but maybe they didn't allocate the right amount to an individual store. So, you know, Amazon only really has to worry about being in stock in one place, whereas retailers, you know, maybe have 1,000 locations across the U.S. and they have to worry about the web. So there's just a lot more opportunities for them to mess up.
Yeah, and so is there anybody guiding them in this regard, or are some of these old style brick and mortar retailers getting any kind of guidance from anybody, and what would that be?
Yeah, there are definitely consulting firms out there who are kind of trying to help them, you know, by using data analytics. You could say this is something that Kohl's is actually doing pretty well. For example, you know, they have an exclusive Jennifer Lopez line, and they've noticed by looking at their data, okay, this brand sells better in the Northeast, I guess perhaps because she is from the Northeast. So they're taking little examples like that to just be more educated about where they need to put the inventory, but obviously it's a big work in process.
We, you know, in your reporting at CNBC, are you seeing or getting any sort of feeling anything coming about any other retailers that might be having some surprise announcements about their futures like Macy's? Are any of them in trouble that you know of that we might be hearing about?
Yeah, well, Aeropostale just announced that they had another disappointing quarter. There's a lot of things happening there that haven't exactly been trending well. As I'm sure you know, the teen retail sector has been under a lot of pressure for quite some time, but we're starting to see some good news out of names like American Eagle, and Abercrombie & Fitch is also doing a little bit better. So Aeropostale continues to be a little bit of a risky name there. And as we mentioned before, Gap also needs to prove to investors. They've been promising that when their spring inventory hits the floors, trends are going to get better for them. So that's a wait and see there.
Yeah, and hopefully the weather will cooperate, you know, get more seasonal, because when it's warm outside like it was right before the holidays, you know, people don't shop. So maybe if it gets warmer a little early, maybe spring will be better.
Yeah, we hope so. I mean, we're hearing early reports that it might actually be a chilly start to spring, which would be difficult because then obviously you would have difficulty moving the warm weather apparel. So it would be a little bit of a reversal of fortunes for these guys who have been, you know, contending with the warmer than expected weather. But, you know, to be determined if that will actually come to fruition.
Stay tuned, as it were. Christina Gustafson, a CNBC reporter, the business of retail. You can follow her at Christina Gustafs on Twitter. Christina, good of you to be with us this morning, and enjoy the rest of your morning. Get a cup of coffee, maybe a donut, and enjoy what's left of your early morning. Thanks for being with us on the opening bell. All right, this is the opening bell. It's 5:53 on WGN 720, and the market futures, the Dow futures, are higher 88 points as we head into the mid-morning. The Dow yesterday closed higher, and the Asian markets this morning also seem to be higher. The Nikkei up 497 in Europe. Those markets, I believe, are closed today I think the FTSE is open today. But we're looking for a bigger open on a positive open on Wall Street later this morning. And also we have the Beige Book coming out later today. So we'll see how that impacts, the markets as that happens too. So, a lot happening throughout the morning here. Stay tuned to WGN 720. The Steve Cochran Show is coming up. And then tomorrow we'll have another conversation about the business of life right here on the opening bell. I'm Steve Grzanich. Have a nice day.